So our first order of business today will be the approval of the minutes for August 17th, 2023. Any corrections or comments from the board on those minutes? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the August 17th minutes.
Blumhardt moves to approve.
Second.
Motion by Blumhardt, second by Carpen to approve the minutes of August 17th, 2023. Any further discussion? If not, Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hegg?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Chairman Hegg?
Aye. Motion carries. The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is the mining issues consent calendar. Mr. Klein, are you there?
Mr. Klein is not here. My name is Brett Graves, and I can answer any questions the board may have.
Okay. For the benefit of the new members, the consent calendar is approved without discussion. However, a member of the board can request that one of the items be pulled off for separate discussion, and certainly you're entitled to ask any questions, Mr. Graves, concerning the consent calendar. So are there any questions, or is there any a member wish to remove an item from the consent calendar? Hearing none, Chair will entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Harper moves to accept the motion of taking the consent calendar as presented.
Okay. Motion by Carpenter. Is there a second?
This is Gary Hegg. I'll second.
Okay. Moved by Carpenter, second by Hegg to approve the consent calendar. Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hegg?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Chairman Hegg?
Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar is approved. Next order of business is the Bentonite Performance Minerals LLC's request for approval of its social economic contractor for a large-scale Bentonite mine permit application pursuant to SDCL 45-6B-33.1. Mr. Holm, are you there?
Yes, I am. Today, Bentonite Performance Minerals is requesting board approval of SWCA Environmental Consultants as its subsector economic contractor. The company has applied for a large-scale mine permit application for Bentonite Mine, located approximately 7 miles northwest of Belfouche, South Dakota. Under the mine statutes, an applicant for a large-scale mine is required to do a socioeconomic impact study and include it in its mine permit application. The law requires the applicant to get board approval for the contractor to conduct the study. It should be noted, as part of the decision-making process on the mine permit application, the board can consider the socioeconomic impacts of a mining operation. The board can deny a mine permit application if it finds the adverse socioeconomic impacts of the proposed mine operation outweigh the benefits of the operation. A copy of SWCA's statement of qualifications was included in the packet that was sent to the board prior to the meeting. Jennifer Hansen from Bentonite Minerals and Heath Bird from SWCA Environmental Consultants are available on the phone to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Questions from the board for the folks from Bentonite Performance Minerals LLC? I assume, or I don't know, I guess I shouldn't assume that if Jennifer, maybe you can answer. Have you guys done prior studies in South Dakota?
Good morning. This is Jennifer. We have our last two studies were for permits that were approved in 2014. They're permit 481 and 42, the Purple and Killinger permits to mine, and they're now in the complete reclamation phase.
Okay. Super. Appreciate the comment.
You bet.
Any further questions from the board? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve social economic contractor for large-scale bentonite mine permit, namely the Bentonite Performance Minerals, LLC.
Blumhardt moves to approve.
Motion by Blumhardt. Is there a second?
Haig, this is Gary Haig. I'll second.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. Further discussion regarding the request for approval. Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Haig?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Chairman Haig?
Aye. Motion carries. They are approved. Okay. The next order of business is the five-year update of Homestake Mining Company's post-closure bond for permit numbers 332 and 456. Mr. Holm.
Before I get started, I know there's a couple. Go ahead.
Chairman Haig, this is Bob Ewing. I have a question for you, sir.
Yes, Mr. Ewing, proceed.
As a sitting county commissioner, Homestake was before our board here probably 10 days ago and done a presentation. Does that create a situation where I should recuse myself for any action on this item?
I think if you were, my take would be, and somebody can pitch in if they want to, but if you were reviewing it from the standpoint of being an official member of a board, I don't think that places you in a personal conflict with it in that capacity. If you were testifying on their behalf for that matter outside of your official capacity, then I think that might be a different story. But if you were acting in official capacity, I think I am okay with you hearing the matter. But I'm willing to listen to any other input.
Okay, thank you.
If anybody has any. I appreciate you bringing it up. Okay, Eric, go ahead and proceed.
Okay, I believe we have a couple people from the South Dakota Investment Council on the phone. You want to identify yourselves quickly?
This is Matt Clark. I'm the State Investment Officer with the South Dakota Investment Council. And Darcy Haug, a senior member of our team, is with us as well. If you want to let them recognize your voice, Darcy.
Hi, this is Darcy Haug. I'm on as well.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Haug.
They will be assisting me a little bit in part of my presentation today. And I believe Mark Thiessen and Jeff Burich from Homestake are also on the line. And the board can ask them any questions, too, as we go along.
Good. Mr. Thiessen and Mr. Burich, are you there?
This is Mark Thiessen. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jeff Burich. I'm here.
Okay, super. Go ahead and proceed, Eric. Thank you.
Okay, if you want to go to slide two, some of the board may remember this, but the board approved a 100-year post-closure period for Homestake Mine Permits 332 and 456 in May of 2006. Under the post-closure plan and post-closure conditions, we're required to do five-year reviews of the post-closure financial assurance. We previously did two of these in 2012 and 2017. For 2022, DANR reviewed and recalculated Homestake's post-closure financial assurance during the last five-year review. The post-closure bond covers water management and treatment, monitoring, and maintenance of post-closure areas. If you want to go to slide three, When we started our five-year review in 2022, we decided to take a hard look at inflation and discount rates using our present worth analysis and our calculation. Our concerns were over the current inflation rates and the appropriate interest rates. We told home state officials what we were going to do, and they asked if they could do its own analysis of the interest and discount rates. Therefore, in November 2022, Homestake asked Barrick's financial advisor, Verus, to analyze inflation and discount rates. In February 2023, Verus submitted an analysis recommending 2.3% inflation rate and a 5% discount rate be used in our prism analysis. That compares to over the current bond, which uses a 5% discount rate and a 3% inflation rate. If you want to move to slide four, we asked the State Investment Council to review the Verus analysis for us. So they went ahead, they reviewed the analysis and developed the following comments. If you want to move to slide five, regarding the inflation rate, the Investment Council disagreed with Verus's 2.3% rate based on the Consumer Price Index. They found during the research that reclamation water treatment inflation has historically exceeded the Consumer Price Index by 1%. They, after their analysis, they recommended a 3.3% inflation rate. If you want to move to slide six, I will have Darcy go through the analysis she did on the inflation rate for that.
Okay, thank you. Darcy, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Darcy Haug. I'll provide some color on the various measures of inflation that we looked at for the project. So slide six, as Eric said, describes multiple different inflation measures and their historical averages over 5, 10, 20, and 30-year time periods. The top light gray line is CPI. This is the most broad measure of inflation and is the most commonly referenced when inflation is being discussed. For this project, we had concerns that the shorter five-year average for reference was overly affected by the demand and supply chain issues since the COVID pandemic. And as you can see, for all of the inflation metrics on the slide, the five-year number in some cases is materially higher than the long-term averages. So for this purpose, we will not be referring to any of the five-year averages. But for the CPI, it has averaged over the other 10, 20, and 30-year periods around 2.5%. But when we were asked to provide guidance around a reasonable estimate for inflation for the bond calculation, we considered what type of costs were part of the annual operation and maintenance plan. The traditional measure of inflation has a 42% weight component from housing. The next largest component is transportation at 18% and 15% from food and beverage. And other goods and services make up the remaining weight. So the only part of the traditional CPI that's directly related to this project is the transportation, and that only is 18% of the weight. And when you think about what inflation has done over the last several decades and how prices have changed, apparel, computers, and electronics have been declining, which pulls down the overall inflation numbers. So we didn't think using the generic CPI inflation rate that was tied to a basket of goods and services was not really relevant to this project, so we didn't think that was reasonable. So once we determined the costs were relating to water treatment, erosion control, road slope and maintenance, vehicles and weed control, we looked at measures that pertain to construction and more closely match those types of activities. We were able to find a reference in a U.S. Department of Interior Office of Surface Mining document that's a handbook for calculation of reclamation bond amounts. In that document, it refers to the fact that many states use the handbook as an approach to cost estimation. And it references an inflation factor based off of an index provided by the Engineering News Record called the Construction Cost Index. It is available on the ENR.com website. So to give context what the ENR index is, it is an index of 20 city average of labor rates, steel, lumber, and cement. It is meant to be a proxy for construction costs, including labor and materials over time. This measure is located below the CPI line, The long-term average of this ENR index is between 3.26 and 3.51%. The difference between this index and CPI is shown on the bottom of the slide in the line with the box around it. This measure has averaged 0.77 to 1% higher than traditional CPI. This is why we thought the CPI was too low when looking into the future cost calculation. The other measures on the slide are alternative measures of inflation tied to various construction activities provided by the Federal Reserve. All of the measures averaged 0.86 to 1.18% higher than CPI. So in conclusion, this is what led to our initial recommendation to add the 1% to the estimated future CPI, which as Eric talked about was 2.3%, which is how we got our 3.3%. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Thank you for that. I don't know. Eric, are you going to proceed then, or?
I can stop at this point and see if the board members have any questions on that.
Okay. Yeah, before we assume you're going to go in the discount rate next. So, yeah, let's any questions from the board regarding the presentation on the so far on the inflation rate? All right. No questions at this time. Go ahead and continue, Mr. Holm.
Okay. We'll move on to the discount rate, and I invite Matt and Darcy to chime in as they go along with this. They analyzed the discount rate, Verus recommended 5% rate. They felt that was not feasible without taking credit risk for which there was no backstop. Just for the board's information, any forfeited financial insurance we would have would be placed into the cash flow fund in the state treasury. Under SDCL 4528, there are certain policies that are listed that the investment council has to follow when they invest money that's placed in the cash flow fund. So they have to not only weigh the return of the investment, but also the amount of risk that's involved in particular investment. They looked at a 30-year U.S. Treasury bond rate at the end of February 2023, which was 4%, which had a lower credit risk. They recommended a 4% discount rate used in our calculations. And again, Matt Darcy, if you want to add anything to that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Matt Clark. I could add a comment if now would be appropriate.
Yeah, proceed. Go ahead.
The key in arriving at the 4%, we knew that rates had moved around a lot. At the time we started this project, rates were below 4%, and then there was some volatility during that period where they would maybe reach approximately 4% and then fall back down. And of course, real recently, they've gone above 4%, closer to 5%. The key we thought was to make sure that the discount rate, this treasury bond yield that we were looking at, was going to be consistent in terms of a long-term forecast with whatever inflation rate ended up being used. And so in our office, you know, we have projections of inflation rates and discount rate structures, you know, that are tied to kind of our inflation methodologies, which are higher than what Verus proposed. But we presumed that their 2.3 CPI recommendation was correct, and said in that world of a 2.3 CPI, and of course Darcy talked about how construction inflation would be above that, but reclamation inflation, but that in a 2.3 consumer price index world, what would be a proper spread between long-term bond yields and that inflation rate? And we came up with about a number that would be 3.9 to 4%, and so we rounded that to 4%. And so that was the basis for our original recommendations, that if there was going to be a 2.3 CPI, we would recommend a 3.3 reclamation cost inflation rate, and a 4% discount rate. And so those were our initial recommendations. Maybe I'll stop there, Eric.
Okay.
This is Chairman Hague. Any questions from the board regarding the statement by Mr. Clark? All right. Go ahead and proceed, Eric.
We'll move on to slide 8. On March 28, 2023, there was a Teams meeting between us, the South Dakota State Investment Council, Homestake, and Verus. During the meeting, Verus presented their analysis, and the Investment Council discussed their concerns with their proposal. And at the end of the meeting, we told Homestake that we would use the Investment Council's 4% discount rate and 3.3% inflation rate. Continuing on to slide 9, on April 13, 2023, the department sent Homestake a revised calculation using the 4% discount rate and 3.3% inflation rate. After they received that calculation, Homestake requested another look at the inflation discount rates. We honored their request, and we just put a provision that they respond to us by July 31, 2023. Continuing on slide 10. On July 25th, 2023, Homestake requested that we change the discount rate to 4.2% and the inflation rate to 3% and using the calculation. And with the provision that we review the inflation discount rates every 3 years to see how the trends are going with both rates. Presented this to the South Dakota Investment Council. They reviewed it, and they agreed to Homestake's request. At this point, I'll stop for any board questions.
Questions from the board regarding the adjustment apparently agreed upon between Homestake and the various state entities, Investment Council and the DANR? No further questions at this time, apparently. Go ahead, Mr.
Okay. I want to first thank Matt and Darcy for all the assistance they provided in this. They were a big help, and I think we got some sound rates that were used in our bond calculations.
Okay.
Continuing on with slide 11. Today we're requesting approval of an update to Homestake's post-closure financial assurance. Again, we're using the 4.2% discount rate and 3% inflation rate that we agreed upon. The period of post-closure has been reduced to 83 years in the calculation. We gave credit to Homestake for activities completed up to year 17. And the post-closure period ends in the year 2105. There's been no change to that from the original calculation. And we used Homestake's actual water treatment and maintenance costs in the calculation. Continuing on to slide 12. The updated financial assurance for this year is $80,201,732. Current financial assurance is $61,271,809. For 2023, we'll need additional financial assurance of $18,929,923. Continuing on to slide 13, the reasons for such a large increase, of course, the reduction of the discount rate from 5% to 4.2%. That $18.9 million increase, approximately $17.5 million of it is due to the change in the discount rate. We also, there, part of it was also for inflation, a lesser amount. There was increased labor, heavy equipment, seed costs, and then also additional water treatment, water sampling, and analysis costs. Moving on to slide 14. Our post-closure financial assurance assumptions, it's based on perpetual water treatment calculations developed by other state and federal agencies. We apply a prison worth analysis of annual costs adjusted for inflation. And the post-closure bond is the sum of all the prison works. And again, water treatment ends in the adjusted year of 83 based on modeling results. Continuing on to slide 15, we have the bond broken down into different sections. First, the annual operation maintenance cost for the East Waste Rock Depository, just monitoring the lower slopes of and the other slopes for erosion and vegetation health, and also road maintenance that would include any grading and snow removal of a short distance of road to get to the water treatment plant and any other facilities. We also have a cost in there for open cut and east waste dump stability monitoring that's done on an annual basis, and that would be Homestake's cost for doing that. Cost for site caretaker slash water sampler. We base that on Davis-Bacon rates. Weed control, we used Homestake's average cost over the last 5 years. And then a vehicle for employees to use, and then also associated vehicle fuel and maintenance. Continuing on to slide 16. In year 2091, or adjusted post-closure year 69, we have a $1 million contingency to cover water treatment and the open cut. Based on the current model, the open cut would eventually fill with water if the underground lab ever shut down. This model indicates that water quality would be good and would not require treatment. However, we wanted a $1 million contingency to cover in the event we needed any water treatment in the year 2091 as a contingency. Going on to slide 17, these are the indirect costs we applied to the annual operating maintenance costs. The mobilization scope and bid, we apply those every 10 years beginning in year 18 or adjusted year one of the post-closure periods. Those are just in case we need to change contractors or something, and they'd have to remobilize and then bid for a contract. So, continuing on to slide 18. Example is how we apply these. Here, 133 direct costs of $143,624. We apply all the various indirect costs of that, and that increases that amount to $202,508. I will now move on to the water treatment part of the bond. You can see on slide 19 the water treatment process for the Blacktail Water Treatment Plant. This treatment process consists of reverse osmosis and biological treatment. The effluent from the East Waste Rock and Southfield Water Collection System is filtered and then treated in a reverse osmosis unit. And the concentrate from the reverse osmosis unit is then run through a biological treatment circuit. Permeate from the reverse osmosis unit is blended with the treated concentrate from the biological circuit before the discharge and compliance point 13 to Deadwood Creek. And the treated concentrate can also be discharged to the Lee Deadwood Sanitary District sewer system. We move on to slide number 20, the post-closure water treatment costs. These are all based on average costs over the last 5 years. We have costs in there for bioplant and reverse osmosis reagents, electricity, natural gas, and then a search charge that Lee Deadwood Sanitary District charges to put water in their system. There is a cost for using Lee City water for potable use and water treatment back wash. And then plant conveyance system operation maintenance and water treatment plant assay costs. Continuing on to slide 21, we also account for labor, three plant operators, a plant manager, and outside contractors. These are all based on the Homestake's cost over the last 5 years. Moving on to slide 22, we also have some other maintenance costs to include for every 25 years, cost to relining three ponds at a cost of $2 per square foot. And then the plan to overhaul class is to replace equipment that wears out over time, which we assume is half of the original construction cost of the plant. At the end of year 2105, or just year 83, when we project that water treatment will no longer be necessary, we would remove the water collection system, which would mainly consist of removing pipes and doing some plugging of pipes also, and then also plugging four monitoring wells and 9 piezometers. Going on to slide 23, this is just a reminder for the board that since Black's water treatment plant is controlled remotely at Homestake's Blacktail Water Treatment Plant, plant manager and operator costs are covered under Homestake's post-closure financial insurance. Going on to slide 24, again, we apply indirect costs of water treatment costs. The only difference between the two is contingency. We increase that from 5% to 10% to account for any seasonal adjustments or other water quality issues that may come up during post-closure period. And then a 3% engineering consulting costs for the water treatment process. Moving on to slide 25, we move on to annual monitoring costs. We have a cost in there for water sample analysis, which is based on required parameters in the mine permit and the surface water discharge permit. And then the lab costs, which the lab gives us a 15% discount. So that's accounted for. And then we also account for aquatic biological monitoring, which would end in post-closure year 37. It's done once every 5 years. And then water sampling equipment, that varies from $1,400 to about $12,000. Moving on to slide 26, again, the monitoring and direct costs, contingency that falls back to 5% on that. And one important point is we do not apply those indirect costs to the analysis costs, and so they're all figured in to the cost of that charge of this. And then we continue on slide 27, just some minor miscellaneous costs for the office, computer office supplies, insurance, and utilities, which utilities are based on the Homestake's average cost for the last 5 years. And 28, with these small costs, we just added 10% contingency and 1% administration to those. And moving on to slide 29, I will go into the present worth analysis that we do. We need to determine the lump sum amount that deposit the day will cover the post-closure costs for 83 years. And then the present worth analysis will determine the present value in today's dollars for future dollar or future value, which is inflated value. And slide 30, I know a lot of the board has seen these slides before. I'll just go through them very quickly. We have a formula we use for future value to calculate the inflation costs. Each total annual cost is first suggested for inflation, then we use the formula below to figure out the future value using the 3% inflation factor. Moving on to slide 31, we then do a present worth analysis, which brings the future value or the inflated value back to today's dollars. And we use that formula using the discount rate of 4.2%. Moving on to slide 32, year one of the adjusted post-closure period is year 18 of the total post-closure project period. Escalation and present worth factors begin at year 18 or adjust in first year of post-closure period after giving credit for the year 1 through 17 work already done. Moving on to slide 33, just an example of how we do this, looking at the year 4 annual cost of $1.3 million. We add the escalation factor in inflation, which increases that to $1.4 million. Then we factor in the present worth using the discount rate, which lowers that to 1.254 million. Moving on to slide 34, when we determine the total amount that we would need for year to, this year for our coming years, we sum all the present values from year one to year 83, and the total that sum, we apply the discount factor that, which increases that to $80.2 million. Well, moving on to slide 35, this will be the face amounts in the next 5 years. For 2023, we're requesting $80.2 million, and for each successful year, we will be coming in with riders provided by Homestake to cover the increased amounts over the next 5 years. And in 2027, we'll begin another five-year review of the post-closure bond. One thing with the three-year review of the inflation discount rates of these numbers, especially after 2026, could change in the future. Going on to slide 36, after the board approved the amount of the updated post-closure finance assurance, Homestake will submit a surety bond rider with the new amount. Surety bond rider will be presented to the board for approval at its next meeting. And the last slide, our recommendation is to approve the increase in Homestake's revised post-closure finance assurance for 2023 from $61,271,809 to $80,201,732.
All right, Mr. Holmes, thank you for that. Questions from the board regarding the presentation and the amounts and so forth? Any questions at this time?
This is Lori Schultz. Since I'm new to this.
Go ahead, Lori.
My main question is, where does 100 years come from, and what is magic about the 100 years?
It's basically, we researched some other states that did long-term water treatment costs. They cut everything off at 100 years. They found that going beyond 100 years, the factors get so small, it really doesn't increase the bond a whole lot. We also did some modeling on this, and it looks like maybe around 100 years, could be a little sooner, maybe a little later.
Determine that maybe water treatment may not be needed after the that time. So what if you get to 99 years and you say it looks like we still need to do water cleansing, then what? Is this all renegotiated again? Yeah, we'd have to renegotiate as we go along. We also do audits once a year when we go out and look at the mining site, see how they're doing.
We look at water quality data, and we monitor it, and if we have to make any adjustments as we go along, we can do that.
Further questions from the board?
Yes, Chairman. Hey, this is Gary Hague. I have a question for Eric.
Okay, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah. Eric, have there been any issues with the stability of the East Waste Rock Dump?
Right now, no. Homestake does annual monitoring of those slopes. There was some concern a couple years ago that there was some movement. However, they did find some error that was going on with the survey system they were using at that time. Ever since that time, they have a brand new monitoring system, and they also have an INSAR system that monitors slope movement through satellites. And right now, we're not seeing any major movements or anything. There's some minor movements that nothing out of the ordinary. Mark or Jeff, you can add on to that if you want.
Yes, one thing we also did in 2019 is transferred from the Homestake coordinate system and, you know, the basic total station surveying, and moved over to the Trimble system and GPS. And now we're on the state coordinate system.
You want to follow up?
Okay, thank you.
Gary? Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. So Mr. Thiessen and Mr. Birch, you worked through this process with the DNR and the Investment Council. So at this point, you're accepting those adjustments on the inflation rate and the discount rate?
This is Jeff Burridge. Yes, we are.
Okay. Thank you. So if we go back to slide 35, so those will be the suggested increases going forward. Are we doing those annually for the 5 year, or basically the agreement or the agreed numbers at this point will take us through the next 5 years, and those would be the adjusted amounts each year of the 5 years?
That's correct. What we'd do in, like, in 2024, we'd come in probably sometime in the spring with a rider to increase that, or if they happen to bond or whatever, we'd present that to the board for acceptance.
Okay. All right. So taking into those percentages that you discussed today, those would suggest that should be increased annually in the amounts reflected.
Exactly.
Okay. Further questions from the board before we proceed? Okay. Hearing none, I guess, do we need to, the vote needs to be the increase, requested increase for the financial insurance from $61,271,809 to the $80,201,732. Mr. Holm, is that the motion that's required?
Yep, just accepting the new amount today.
Okay. All right. Any further questions from the board? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the requested increase in the surety amount from $61,271,809 to the increase the post-closure bond to the amount of $80,201,732.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bob Ewing. I would make a motion to approve the recommendation from the board to increase the post-closure financial assurance for 2023 from $61,271,809 to $80,201,732.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a second?
Carpen seconds.
Moved by Ewing, seconded by Carpen to increase the bond for approval. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Secretary, call the roll.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hegg?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Chairman Hegg?
Aye. Motion carries. The bond is increased. All right. Next item on the agenda is this is a time for, pursuant to statute, to allow for public comment concerning matters coming before the board. Is there anybody present in peer or that has called in that would like to make a comment at this time? You're welcome to do so.
Chairman Hegg, no one called me to for the public comment period, and we have no one in peer from the public.
Okay. Thank you for that, Brenda. I'll just make one last call for public comment. This is the opportunity to make those comments this time. Based on my understanding and hearing none, we will move forward to the next item on the agenda. Ms. Schultz, we again welcome to the board, and we like to just get a little personal kind of history background from board members to educate the rest of us about about yourself, and if you're ready at this time, I'd appreciate to make whatever comments you'd like.
Thank you very much. I grew up on a farm in the northeast part of the state, east of Watertown, south of Millbank, so I'm familiar with Grand Quarries. I saw that was on one of the items. I went to high school at Grant Newell High School, which doesn't exist anymore, gone away, and then I went to SDSU, got a degree in civil engineering. After graduating, I went to work in the DOT and worked in the bridge design office for 10 years. Then I worked with the local government, cities, and counties for 10 years. Then I went to work for Bros Engineering, a consulting firm here in town, for 10 years. I did everything in blocks of 10, apparently. And then I went back to the DOT and ended up as a program administrator there and worked with cities and kind of counties again and grant programs, the environmental office, and a number of, I had like 20 different tasks that I worked on. I'm married to Brad Schultz, who worked for DENR back in the day for over 30 years, and so I'm familiar with a lot of the staff members. We have three children and one grandson. And, he's the smartest kid in the world.
Congratulations on that. we need a new generation of smart people, so thank you. Anything further, Lori?
No, that's all.
All right. Well, thank you for that. It's obviously you've got a lot you can bring to our group. We love the diversity of the board. And so welcome, and hopefully you'll enjoy the experience.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Bob, next time, if you could do the same for us at our next meeting, we'd appreciate that. I think I credit Mr. Morris with originally bringing up this idea. And so I think we've all enjoyed kind of understanding the background of the other members, so we all appreciate that. Okay, any further information to come before the board today? Brenda, do you have any prediction on the agenda for the next meeting and whether we'll need a in-person meeting or not?
The only thing I know of is the bond that we just addressed.
Yeah, and then Michael will have one permit transfer, possibly two.
Okay. So probably we'll need a November meeting for that, I assume.
I believe so, Chairman Hegg.
Okay.
I don't know if we necessarily have to have it in person, I guess.
Right.
Phone call would be okay for those transfers.
Okay.
Unless something else comes up between now and
sure.
then.
Sure, never know. So, all right, any other matter to come before the board before we move to adjourn?
Chairman Hegg, the date for that meeting is November 16th.
November 16th. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Hearing nothing further, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Carpen moves to adjourn.
Motion by Carpen. Is there a second?
Gold second.
Gary Hegg.
Oh, I think we're covered, Gary. Thank you. Secretary, call
okay.
the roll.
Blumhart.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Greenfield. Gary Hegg.
Aye.
Carpen.
Aye.
Schultz.
Aye.
And Chairman Hegg.
Hi, motion carries. We are adjourned. See you next month. Thank you.